And it sounded very easy at the time, so I said, sure. Then I began to think about what we're going to do. And it wasn't until last night that I finally got some ideas. And one of them is what changes and what doesn't change. So I put down a few things here, and I will ask you in a little bit to add something to it. But I heard about the conversation that took place between a rabbi and a priest and a Protestant pastor. And the subject was, when life begins. So the priest said, well, life begins at conception. And the Protestant minister said, no, he thought life began at the beginning of the fifth month. And the rabbi said, no, you're both wrong. His life begins when the children leave home and the dog dies. the golden years are not the end, they're the beginning. We have a figure that we throw around, age 65, when there's supposed to be a change. There's a U.S. congressman got interested in how that age of 65 began to be established. And he did some research, and this is what he came up with. He says, why 65? Why not 63 or 67? One account has it that the number was chosen by Chancellor Otto von Bismarck in 1881 when he established the first known Social Security program. Historians observed that he wasn't as interested in the welfare of German workers as he was in weakening the magnetism of socialism. Whoever had a pension in his old age, he said, is more content and easier to manage than one who has no such prospect. He chose 65 after his actuaries concluded that few Germans in the late 19th century lived much beyond age 65. So, in other words, there wasn't any retirement. Age 65 was the average age of the males in those days. So the concept of retirement, don't just where it began, but that's where 65 came into the picture. Now, we do know from the scripture that David came a time when kings no longer went to battle, but he still held his job and merely changed his activities. But that's an interesting fact, isn't it? It's how 65 came into existence. Now, it looks like that there's more ladies here than there are men in this workshop. But I have next on the list here a question. Now, it seems to me when the children leave home, and whether it's before or after the dog dies, that the wife goes into kind of a life of retirement. You know, has a lot of time on her hands, could do the things she's always wanted to do. And then the husband retires. And so she has to come out of retirement then and start taking care of him. So it's really not fair because his retirement kind of spoils hers, don't you think, to quite a degree? I've heard a little feedback on that from other people, including my wife, after I started hanging around the house a little bit more than I used to. These things I've got written down here, I haven't got them in any priority order. But I thought about three people that I knew who could hardly wait until they reached age 65. Well, one of them was earlier than that. And they were going to get away from the load of their daily routine and really start living it up. So the first fellow, he toughed it out for just about a week. And then he went back to his office and said, could I just volunteer? Come in and help out every day. He didn't even live a week with nothing to do. Now, the other fellow lives here in town. He's a retired military officer. And he told me, he said, now, my wife and I always knew what we were going to do. So the first few years, we traveled every place in the world. Then the next few years, he said, we fixed up the house. You know, everything we could think of. Do and redo. And he said, then we began to, you know, get bored. What else was there to do? So he used to come out here to the Glen Eyrie and help mail tapes. And I talked with him several times. He's a retired lieutenant colonel. And he said, you know, I know dozens of people like me. You know, particularly military people. So I said, well, let's have a meeting of some of them. So we started having breakfast once a week out here and got about 30. And we decided there was a lot of talent there, so we started a little organization. We didn't want to call it retired people or over-the-hill people or anything, so we called it Christian Resources Outreach. And everybody in there had some special skill. So we went first to churches and Christian organizations. I found out what needed to be done that we could volunteer for. So that was, I think, the most productive time in his life. You know, something to do. Not only himself, but he mobilized other people to do it. When people don't plan for retirement, a remarkably large number of them die during the first year after retirement. People that have not had any health problems previously. And several people try to figure out why this happens. Well, I remember when we were living over in London, by the way, at age 65, my wife and I moved overseas to take on the biggest job we'd ever had. And shortly after that, I don't think the two were related, but I had to have bypass surgery, get a little more blood to my heart, just like Jerry had a little while back here. And went in for regular checkups in London. And one day while I was waiting to see the doctor, a British man came and sat down. And, of course, the British are very difficult to get acquainted with, you know, unless you have a proper introduction. You don't carry on a conversation. But this man was very talkative. You know, I never saw a British person like him. He said, what are you here for? And I explained to him and why I was there. And he said, I said, why are you here? He said, well, I had a heart attack. And he said, it happened on the train. And he said, it wasn't because the train wasn't on time. But he said, ordinarily I drive to work. And he said, you know what it is, those 200,000 people driving into London every day to work, you know, traffic is terrible. But he said, never any problem. But he said, here it was on the train, going into London to go to work, and I couldn't control anything, the starts or the stops or the speed or anything. So just out of his frustration at not being able to control anything, he had a heart attack there on the train. Well, as I've checked with other people, particularly military people, this is what often happens. You know, they've been active, achievers, controlling things, and all of a sudden, all you've got is, you know, your parrot and your dog. And they don't pay all that much attention to your baby. So, it can be a real hazard to make a radical change without some planning for the transition. Now, there are other problems that come along, too, and I want to read this prayer that slipped out of the newspaper a while back. It's called Prayer for Older Folks. Lord, thou knowest that I am growing older. Keep me from becoming too talkative, and particularly, keep me from falling into the tiresome habit of expressing an opinion on every subject. Release me from the craving to straighten out everybody's affairs. Keep my mind free from the recital of endless details. Give me wings to get to the point. Give me grace, dear Lord, to listen to others, describe their aches and pains. Help me endure the boredoms with patience and keep my lips sealed, for my own aches and pains are increasing in number and intensity, and the pleasure of discussing them is becoming sweeter as the years go by. Teach me the glorious lesson that occasionally I might be mistaken. Keep me reasonably sweet. I do not wish to be a saint, but a sorrow woman is the crowning work of the devil. Make me thoughtful, but not moody, helpful, but not pushy, independent, yet able to accept with graciousness favors that others wish to bestow on me. Free me of the notion that simply because I have lived a long time, that I am wiser than those who have not lived so long. If I do not approve of some of the changes that have taken place in recent years, give me the wisdom to keep my mouth shut. Lord knows that when the end comes, I would like to have a friend or two left. Well, I think that's one of the things we confront the most. You know, we know more than we've ever known. We've had more experience we've ever had. And nobody's interested in it. You know, when we're the most useful, apparently, it's difficult to find a place to use what we've accumulated. Well, one other thing before we get into something else here. I think there's a poem been written on this also, and I heard my pastor say it for the first time. He talked about the senior citizen giving a report, and he said, as I began to get older, he said, the first thing that weakened were my eyes. And he said, I got these glasses, and they're not quite as good as the originals, but I can make them all right. And he said, my teeth began to go. And he said, you know, I've got some substitutes here, and I'm missing one that I'm going to get fixed on Wednesday. but he said, these substitutes are all right. I get along all right. And then he said, the next thing, my hearing began to go bad. And he said, I've got this hearing aid, and it whistles a little bit, makes a little noise, but he said, it's all right. Then he said, my back began to get weak, and he said, with the aid of a cane to support it, no, he said, you know, I get along all right. He says, it's my mind that I miss. So there comes a time that we do go downhill in all those things, but it's not 65. An outline of the life, I think, of both Peter and David and others in Scripture I've got down here, and I think this is a good sequence to follow. Peter was first a learner, then he was a leader and a pioneer. Then he became the statesman, and when they had the big council at Jerusalem in Acts 13, after Peter spoke, you know, that was it. They accepted it. And then he became an author. David pretty much followed this same sequence, although it wasn't spread out the way it was with Peter. Well, those are just some preliminary thoughts that I had. Now to get to the meat of it. There are two headings here. One is areas which remain the same after retirement, and the second page, areas of change. And I'm sure that we can add to these. So that's what I want us to do is put on some new things, and I'm going to do this workshop again next week, and with your help, I'll have material for a good workshop. But I'm just sorry that it wasn't reversed so that you could get in on the wisdom of the other group there. But in looking at things, it is the same. Ecclesiastes 8:8. This is a paraphrase of two or three translations and a little bit out of context, but it's a good thought anyway. There's no discharge or no furlough in battle. So, for a military person, he's always looking forward to retirement. No one he can get out. But in the battle of life, the spiritual battle, not only is there no retirement, no discharge, and not even a furlough during the battle. So that's one of the things that doesn't change, is the spiritual battle that we've been involved in that will continue long as we live. Is that right? The next thing I wrote down here, Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, there's no change in our obligation or ability to be kept in the will of God. So that goes on, doesn't it? For retirement, we're interested in finding the will of God and being directed in it. Okay, that continues. Now, the next thing has to do with the use of our gifts. From the time we became a Christian, we were supposed to utilize our gifts for the glory of God. So that doesn't change, does it? There's no change in our relation to our spouse, children, grandchildren, church, Christian friends and associates. That continues on. Excepting we're having more time, there's no change in the matter of prayer, Bible study, ministry. Correspondence, business matters continue to go on, do they not? And then I've got another thing here that there's no change in the second law of thermodynamics. What is that law, second law of thermodynamics? Well, that's one of the most fixed laws of the universe, and that is that everything is always wearing out and going downhill. Everything is deteriorating. And there'll always be a lot to do around the house and with everything we own, because deterioration process goes on. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's Henry Morris. That's one of the main things he used in his objections to evolution. That the whole law of the universe, everything is running down, not going uphill. And I like one of his illustrations. He said, if you take a few loads of lumber and some nails and some roofing and stuff and throw it out on a vacant lot, well, theoretically, eventually all those things would come together in a house. It's the only problem is they'd rot and rust out before that ever happened. So everything is going downhill. Okay, now the next page, and then I want to come back and add to these lists. What does change? Well, the biggest change I think that takes place is that our time and energy are no longer regimented. I know somebody else does not continue to control our time. What time we set the alarm, and we quit punching the clock, 9 to 5 o'clock. So this is the biggest area of substitution, with somebody else not mobilizing my time and energy. Then what I'm going to do with it? I think that's the first thing that comes along. Now, our financial position changes, and it seems to be a phenomenon of this age that with tax load decreasing, that a lot of people I know, their financial position has actually improved when they retire. But this is an area that takes some pre-planning. Otherwise, survival automatically takes care of the time and energy that's become available, just used some other way. About 10 years before I knew I was going to reach retirement age, I did something that I'm glad that I did. Often people from various parts of the world would say, Well, if you're ever here, why, you know, we'd like to set up a conference. We were going to be here. Well, what they're saying is they'd like for me to be involved in a conference, but they couldn't pay for it. But if you're ever going to be here, it's somebody else's expense or your own. Well, I thought, well, now that'd give me a lot of freedom. So I asked the Lord about 10 years before I was going to retire to allow me to discover some investments or something so that for the rest of my life I would be able to travel any place in the world at my own expense. Now, if they're able to reimburse me for it, that's fine. If they're not, and so my wife had an opportunity to go to Japan shortly after that, and I spent a summer in Europe where that once we arrived on the continent, you know, they'd take care of all expenses. And so I'm in that position today, and it's a very liberating thing that I never have to turn down any invitation for ministry because the money's not available. So that's one of the things that I'm glad that I planned for. I mentioned already this Christian Resources outreach that we had, opportunities for more volunteer ministry. A lot of opportunities in that area. More time for leisure and recreation, more time for family. On the other side, more health and energy problems, too. We have a man on the Navigator staff. He's got a PhD in nuclear physics. And he's very brilliant in many other areas, and I trust his research. But I don't know how in the world he ever arrived at this. But he said 65% of everything that's accomplished in the world is accomplished by people who are tired or don't feel good. Now, to me, that'd be a pretty hard research project to come up with that answer, but that's what he said. Either tired or don't feel good, 65%. So, more health and energy problems, but that doesn't mean that productivity has to cease. Now, I think this next one needs to be underlined. Time for creativity. And this is a quotation from a book that I have, and I've thought of it many times. As long as one produces creatively, he has a sense of purpose. And I've used this, leadership situations. The minute that you deprive a person of the opportunity of creativity, a sense of purpose begins to disappear. So the secret, according to this, of maintaining a sense of purpose is be creative. Does that sound right? So that's probably the greatest secret there is to making retirement the golden age is exercise creativity in every area. Otherwise, a sense of purpose is going to be lost. Now, I'm just running through this, and I want to get back and discuss it kind of point by point. I attended a seminar several years ago on industrial motivation. And one of the speakers pointed out that there are four parts, I don't know what you maybe call them, in the life of the working man. 20 to 35 is what they called positioning. And what he's interested in is not so much what he's doing as he is what it leads to. And I'm sure this is true of career women also. You know, what I'm doing is not all that important, except this, where does it lead to? Now, it seems that a person, a laboring person, knows instinctively that the years of productivity are 35 to 50. So I better be in position for what I'm going to give my life to by the time I'm 35. So if I can get there sooner, better. But this 20 to 35, that's the whole drive. I want to make sure that I arrive at what I'm going to give my life to as soon as possible. Now, about the time a person reaches 50, they realize I'm not going to be around forever. And if I'm going to make any contribution to posterity, I'm going to have to share what I've learned. So this is an enriched role, according to this particular seminar I attended, in that as well as continuing to produce, we become a coach, teacher, share the secrets we've learned with other people. Now, this particular seminar I attended cut off at age 65, so they didn't have any solution beyond that. So I had to add the rest of it in here. When you come to 65 plus, I'd say the golden age continues above at our own pace and priority. And here we put the emphasis where we want it. So really, this should be the richest age that we have, as we not only produce, but we coach, teach, and share with other people that which we've learned that can help them and maybe speed up the process. Now, I've just got a personal note here as to why I made a decision at age 70 to quit punching the clock. And I found out, this is a paraphrase of something Dawson Trotman said, never do what someone else can do and will do while there's so much remaining to be done that only I can do. And I saw that if I stayed active in what I was doing another 5 years, the things that I'd always wanted to do were going to be neglected. And that the things I was doing were things that other people could and would do. Maybe not quite as well as I'd do them. But they'd get done if I just stepped out of the way. Now, I think younger people maybe were more ambitious and would probably do a better job of some of the things that I was doing. And the things that Lauren Sandy needed me to do for him, I could still do from the same platform I was in. So I wouldn't be cutting him short on that. So I think that was my greatest motivation. There are some things that only I can do, and they're not getting done. And if I keep on what I'm doing another 5 years, they may not get done. And the things that I'm doing instead of that are really not that important, because there's somebody else that will step right in and do that. Well, I tried to come up with a summary here that has a blank line at the end of it then. Retirement frees us from daily regimentation of our time and energy to earn a living. That's most of what I'm doing. So we can. So, first of all, I'd like to start at the end and fill in the blanks there, the bottom of the page. And it's okay to repeat some of the things we've already talked about here. Maybe we ought to just do it. How about people over that table? You go ahead and write something on the bottom of the page, and then we'll have you read it back to us. And, you know, you two can work together, you work together, and the rest of you, well, I guess you're just going to work individually anyway, but write down some things on there. No, just do it individually, I think. And we'll each one, we're a small group here, so everybody can read back what they've written down. Jerry? You willing to read what you wrote down?
Well, I'm thinking about retirement. Before I did, I was working in a drugstore for two brothers and their wives. And I worked there twice as long as anybody else they ever had. and balancing two brothers and their wives, where the two brothers could not speak civilly to each other. Anything that passed between them passed through the wives. I figured that I had handled it about as long as I could. And the thing that I tasted of with pleasure was the ability to wake up in the morning, and those moments after you wake up and before you get up was to resolve, well, now today I think I'll fix, no, that'll wait, I'll do something else. That was the thing that I really looked forward to, and it has been real nice. But the things that we have done together by retiring, we're sharing in other people's lives by being an encourager. We're active in hospice and feel that that is one of the greatest privileges we've ever had. If in your area you have a hospice unit and it's not taking care of, some people can't handle taking care of sick people, but I have cleaned out irrigation systems and I have shoveled snow. And I mean, there's a lot of things you can do in hospice besides, I'm not here to sell hospice either, but it's been one of the most thrilling things we've ever been in. And then I've done some widows fix it. We spend time at our cabin up in the woods.
Yeah.
And then I build furniture for my kids.
Just up the table here, upstairs. Not my clothes now. Sorry,
okay, Marge.
Very, very busy.
I don't see how people can be bored. I never have enough time to get to where I want to go.
Well, Steve told about doing hospice, and I also work at volunteer at nursing homes and care centers and take tapes and write letters, and I've been doing that for 6 years. I got paid for it, and I've been doing it for 8 years at one point. But anyhow, I've been doing it for a long time. That has been the most exciting part of my life. And that's what I want to keep on doing. I don't want to stop. But I did put down, spend time at cabin and travel some.
Travel. You write letters for other people?
Yeah.
Take dictation and...
I do that, and then I also write to people's families that, you know, they could only hear by my, because of me, and I've been with lots of them when they died. It's sad, but it's, we had a 17-day-old baby that died, and I was comparing that to all these people that, to me, the most important thing is that they know the Lord, and so I try to get that into them before they die. And many of these people don't know the Lord. And, but the baby dying, that was the hardest thing.
That was very emotional. And when they called, the only thing I could say was safe in the arms of Jesus. And if you ever are involved in the death of the baby, that's all you need to say. Because the father later said that that was the most comforting thing he heard all through this time. It was safe in the arms of Jesus.
But the minister that had the funeral, I had never in my life heard anything so wonderful. He said that this baby had touched more lives than most ministers do all their lives because of the witnesses and families.
What you were saying earlier, Jerry, reminded me of something that I've said quite often, that you know, after I quit punching a clock 9 to 5, I wonder, how did I ever find time to do a day's work?
Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah.
But it is more fun, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, Bill, what'd you write down?
Well, I've got about 7 points here. I'm in the process of transition from a secular job to full-time staff as an advocate, so I resigned from my regular job. I still am part-time a client still doing that 3 days a week, giving myself more time 4 days a week for ministry and the things that I really like to do. So I listed the reasons for that are, one, I want, I'm in a process of becoming a godly man, and to develop a more intimate walk with God. Secondly, I want more time to be a loving husband and to free my wife so that she can develop her full potential. Thirdly, I want to encourage my sons and their wives and their walk with God and their service to Him. Fourthly, I want to leave a spiritual heritage for my grandchildren and beyond to God's glory. And I like that verse that was shared by Don Lanier this morning, 2 Timothy 4:7. I fought the good fight and so forth. You want to end up that way. So do I. Sixth, I want to be more dependent on God, not on my own ability to earn money. I find that rather exciting, to not take things in my own hands and work for a living until I die, but to just live a life of faith and let Him supply whatever resources He wishes to supply in order that I might do and enjoy whatever He wants me to enjoy. But I'll know that whatever comes in from here on is going to be not by my own cleverness or hard work or whatever. And my wife and I have agreed that we will just reduce our standard of living if that becomes necessary, if that's what God's will is. I would like to, if you remember that Bill Gothard seminar where the guy, he talks about the people gathering around where the guy's going to read his will. The lawyer reads the will of this man who had been quite wealthy. And as the people gather around, all expecting to receive a substantial amount of money through this man's resources, the lawyer stands up and he says, "I'll now read the will." He says, "So and so, I, being of sound mind and body, spent it all." And I think that there's something to be said for that philosophy of not just trying to accumulate wealth. And as far as ministry is concerned, I just wanted to give myself to the ministry of populating heaven by multiplying laborers, and so develop an eternal posterity. And I find that exciting, to think that as I go to glory, and I'm looking at those who are coming after me, that there will be people from many different tribes and nations and so forth that are there as a result of my making a contribution to some lives while I was here. So, I like that verse that was quoted from Psalm 90:12, "Teach us to number our days." So I'm at 60 years of age, a transition time, and I think, well, I want to run the last lap to the glory of God, all out for Jesus.
Okay, yeah. What you said reminded me of a sign I saw in a travel agency, and it said, "Go first class, your children will." That's what happened as we pass along to them, so we can do that. Well, if there's any one verse that would probably tie together the things we're talking about, it's in Psalm 92, actually 12 through 15. I think I should have written that down at the top of the page here, shouldn't I? Psalm 92, 12 through 15. Who'd like to read that for us? Somebody over in the center so everybody can hear well here. Okay.
"The righteous shall flourish like a palm tree. He shall grow like a cedar in Lebanon. Those who are planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of our God. They shall still bear fruit in old age. They shall be fresh and flourishing to declare that the Lord is upright. He is my rock, and there is no unrighteousness in him."
Yeah, the King James Version says they're full of sap in their old age.
Very green.
Okay.
So we had a different direction to begin, and we began to pray and ask the Lord what he wanted us to do, and several doors were closed that we thought what the Lord had for us to do. So we moved to Lubbock, Texas, and both took jobs, paying jobs at Texas Tech, and were able to work with the students at Tech, and also we work in the children's ministry at our local church. And we decided that we would never retire, that we would retool and redirect our energies to something that the Lord had for us. And year by year, we see working with the children, we're helping to build them for eternity, and that's our main thing that we want to do. We have extra time for teaching God's Word because Hank is not gone all the time, and we have a better, more of a sharing relationship. He's able to help with the housework now because he isn't on 24 hours a day. He's on an 8-to-5 day and able to work at the church and tinkering around and helping with the little maintenance projects. And we are looking for jobs that other people don't want to do in the Christian ministry. And we haven't found what the Lord has for us in our next 40 years.
Well, my husband was in a nursing home for 15 months, so I used to go every day and visit him. So I know all these old people that are still left in the home. So I go in twice a week, and they're so happy to see me and everything. And then I go in sometimes other days and help with the activities when they play games and everything and do little things for them. And then I've also volunteered to 2 days a week to put in hours at our senior citizen center. And then I've got time now. I've got more time for quiet time, which I, in the last couple of years, was real hectic, so I didn't get as much time as I should have. And I'm doing things like gardening and quilting and things like that that I never had time to do before, and I'm really enjoying it.
Well, when my husband died 6 years ago, I came out of retirement and went back to work. And the job was very rewarding. I was in office and positions, and I enjoyed it and worked very much, but God made me a little bit dissatisfied with that job. And gave me really a ministry with Bruce Doss. I'm being paid to work for Bruce, but my goal is that I might be able to give up the salary so that I can do more volunteer work for him afterwards and be able to work with whoever is available for me to serve.
Obviously, all of the general things that have been said, but I haven't retired yet, and each year I say I'm going to retire, and each year I teach school, and I teach high school, and I teach juniors and seniors in high school, and I see a lot of the things that are going on, and each year I say, I don't know if I can put up with it with another year, and each year I go back. So I still haven't retired, but I have a specific talent or training, and I'd like to be able to use that training with young people on a volunteer basis. For many years, I worked with disadvantaged adults, and I found that very rewarding and very worthwhile, and could just turn around the life of an individual. I would like to do that when I retire. I also want to study more when I retire. I want to study the Bible. There are many things that I still want to learn, I think there are other things out there that I could make part of my talents that I could then give to someone else. So studying in many different ways is what I really would like to do when and if I retire. I don't know. It keeps going on year after year after year. But I must enjoy doing this. That's why I'm not giving it up.
Well, Catherine, one of my friends who's 76 just got a PhD.
I think that obviously is the time to go back and study for in many areas because you don't have the pressure of work and you relax and you don't have to do what you would do ordinarily if you were going for a specific degree and you were a young person thinking of your life ahead of you because you had to get it. So studying is one of the main things I want to do.
Well, I tell you, I've kind of tried to summarize a theme that's running through here. I haven't heard anybody say they want to do nothing and be idle. Okay?
I had listened to everybody with awe as to the productivity they talked about, and I wondered if they, what they perceived before they retired, say, 5 or 6 years, were they like me and saying, I'd like to pursue things that I didn't have time to do when I'm working, and or the energy. It seems like my 8-hour day absorbs all the energy I have, and when I come to the end of the day, I don't seem to want to do that. So I wondered if that is the correct perception at this stage, or should I be trying to elevate my goals, especially in a spiritual way. Seems everybody here talked about growth through helping others. I'm very impressed by it. Perception is just having more time to do the things I want to do. Maybe that's kind of selfish. Well, I wonder if anybody could comment on that.
Well, I think what you've said there, you know, it kind of emphasizes what we said now, our work. Most of our life is really a platform for ministry. And, you know, so it's work's a wonderful thing. You know, we all like it and enjoy it. But the other side of it is it does take the time and energy. It does most of our time and energy. So there are just things that we want to do and need to do that cannot be done on the job. So I think you're right, you know, that what you're looking forward to is diverting that time and energy to something that is more enjoyable and we trust more productive. Okay, what do you
motivation, and I had a terrible fear of I think that probably the greatest enemy of retirement would be lethargy and lack of motivation. And if you have time that's not regimented, and I hear people say, you know, I can remember when I used to feel like that I would love to, you know, keep learning all that much and everything, but right now I feel I need recharge than the motivation angle. But the thing I wrote down here was retirement frees us from daily regimentation of our time and energy to earn a living so that we can produce creatively at our own pace and power and continue to grow and grow. So I'll be able to
Okay, good. We want to get all the way around here, so what do you add?
I want to comment on how you reminded this old phrase of, I think it's something like you die and you live. And I think that if the dying has been real productive in retirement, it's because you've been real productive in ministry as you've worked. And well, I do need to keep that in mind. I'm looking, I've still got 4 years before I'm fully vested, so I've got a little time. I'm looking forward to being more productive in the Navigator Ministry after I retire, and because they have been so helpful to me. And one thing that my wife and I have done is to put the Navigators in our will just here, because we want to make sure that that we're able to help them. I'm looking forward to ministry more with my wife. It seems like that I have a job in the bigger city, and she teaches in the smaller town, so we're quite often apart a lot, if you know what I mean. So we're looking forward to more of that. I do have some lifelong dreams, some things that I already have very definite plan that I do want to do at that time. And like many of you, I'm looking forward to more time in my quiet time, more time with prayer. I think right now I can minister with my grandchildren by playing with them, roughing with them. At some point in life, I might just have to pray for them. I really believe that every day that God gives me in life, no matter what my physical situation or ever might be or whatever, there's still a purpose that God might have for me to be on earth. Even if I can't move, I can still pray for them. And I am looking forward to some writing.
I'll read what I said. Retiring would be so that I could fill my hours with specific tasks that fully glorify the Lord. How can we have time to wait upon the Lord and seek His bidding when we're in ministry and time and energy? I desire to empty my hands in order to have them filled with God's bidding. And my prayer is that I would finish strong. My life would have to be kind of turned around just a little bit. When I heard you talking about being in school, which was day one, it reminded me of the time that I started out in college. I had very few hours, and I was 37. I went to school with my daughter at Texas Women's University, and didn't really have any particular goal in mind, for myself. I wanted to really encourage her because she was having fun problems. And we had several classes together. We had a lot of fun studying together. And soon my advisor said, what is your degree plan? I said, gee, I don't know. So being interested in elementary school students, I did major in elementary education and minor in English. And taught first grade for a year and a half right after I finished school. Getting close to 40, then I was like, gee, I have somebody behind me. I'm just so old. I used to be 40, so. But then I continued going to school and got my master's in counseling and guidance. And then I worked with an elementary counselor for, finished about 20 years. And I have the time. This year I have the time. And this was a year and a half after my husband's first son there. And so I think I did it real rapidly. I really prayed about it, thought about it. And I really had the desire to have more time for study in the Word and really seeking God's will. And a verse that really has struck me recently is found in Psalm 25, verse 4. Show me your way, O Lord. Teach me. Lead me in your truth and teach me, for you are the God of my salvation. On you I wait all the day. And I trust that I will have more time to really wait upon the Lord for His direction, not just scurrying about in things, but I want every stroke to count. I would like to, as I said, be strong.
Okay, good.
Retire, but retire.
Well, retirement seems on the way, too. and sometimes I really the council that came to me is that it seems in the last few years I've had opportunities to show hospitality to other people staying in the home for a week or a day, and in retirement I've had that opportunity to do it without the restrictiveness of work. That's all I know.
The verse in 1 Corinthians 12 that says talks about this couple that were word is addicted to hospitality. It's a good addiction to have. Okay.
I had the idea that when the kids grew up, my kids are still young. I'm just saying about this. Traveling for a while, places where I'd love to go, like Africa and South America. And somehow, working with a mission group, so to speak, even if it's washing dishes or, you know, just something for a while, with mission group. And then I had also ideas of, opening up my home, work missionaries go through wherever I might be, working with the people. And I had also the idea of prayer in the mission, that more times of prayer for specific needs for prayer than uninterrupted Bible
time. Just the thoughts that I had, Jim. People are remembered for the effect they have, whether good or bad, on other people. Hitler is remembered for one thing. Abraham Lincoln is remembered for another. So we will be remembered really only insofar as we affect the lives of other people. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, I think that fits what we're talking about here in the ages of man, that if all you do is produce, that's very limited. But when we teach others, share, enrich, coach, teach. And, you know, psychologically, that's the reason that a person, I think, gets into this at 50, 65, because he realizes he will leave nothing to posterity if all he does is produce. It's when he teaches others, that's what's left. Well, two or three times it's come up here the matter of grandchildren. Lauren Sanney, who's just changed jobs, feels that that's probably his greatest ministry opportunity is the grandchildren. And Lauren and I have two grandchildren in common. And our daughter-in-law gave us several years ago a book called The Grandfather's Book. Have you seen that? And, you know, I think the reason I haven't gotten to it, just because it's so extensive, but it's about 50 pages. But it's for you to write down, you know, where you were born, what you remember about your parents, what you did, where you lived. And the time you get through that, you've written a complete biography. And it's for the grandchildren. And probably one of the greatest things that we could pass on to our grandchildren. And what do you feel strongly about?
And they are so excited, and you know, really excited to hear their grandfather's voice.
I had the idea to put on video rather than
tape. Well, now that would even be needed. Videotape.
Several years ago, Cliff Barras was here with us, and he said that they were doing that with his father, and they would make him put about an hour a day on tape, just on any subject. You know, and they said that was one of the greatest things they thought they had done. And videotapes even better. Well, one of the things that I've concluded as a result of this session, I kind of wish that we had it on videotape. And I think about the people that you visit in the nursing home, of probably of a lot of illness as a result of boredom. You know, that We're talking about your highly motivated people here that have a purpose in life that's going to continue from now on. I wish we could pass along our concept of what it means to change jobs to some of them. I haven't spent all that much time around people like this, but most of them lost any sense of purpose, haven't they? And they hadn't planned for it. Well, supposed to take a picture at 12:30. I think the weather's not going to cooperate.
He had a rumble.
Yeah, might be another day. But one other thing, I wonder if you had any ideas here. I wrote these down in a hurry. What does not change, and what does change? What can we add to that list? Okay.
The main thing that doesn't change is God. He's there and He's available. No matter when we reach out to Him, He's going to be there to help us.
Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever.
Mm-hmm.
The most important thing in our life are relationships, aren't they? And that. Yeah, they don't change.
A little slogan that I keep kept on my head says that for every minute that you're angry, you have lost 60 seconds of pain. And I think that same thing is said of grieving or whatever. You know, I think the Lord expects us to pick up and move on and not dwell on pain.
That's the only way you can.
Mm-hmm. Another
thing that doesn't change,
you're still living yourself.
You better whip yourself into shape.
Shape up.
Well, I think to many people, retirement can be very hazardous, but the tone of this group is it's a great opportunity for fulfillment. Well, I appreciate being with you, and I've been inspired and motivated by your helping out. Why don't we conclude with a word of prayer and just ask the Lord's blessing. Our Heavenly Father, thank you for the time together. We know that you're the same forever, and we look to you to make our lives and the lives of those we touch even more productive as the years go by. And we pray that this passage in Psalm 92 will be fulfilled in all of our lives. In Jesus' name, amen.